My name is Christine Hill. I'm right now a professor for media trend and public appearance at Bauhaus University in Weimar. I am a visual artist. I usually make projects that are a combination of installation work, performative work, sculptural work. These are shown both in the context of galleries and museums, but they're also shown quite a lot just out of spaces that are designed by my studio or their own initiative. I have been at the Bauhaus since October of 2004, and so I design projects here. Most of the projects I run are out of my studio, which is called Volksboutique. Volksboutique used to be a secondhand store that was based in Berlin, and it has since become a kind of production house. There's a studio in New York, there's one in Berlin. Most of the projects that Volksboutique offers I call organizational ventures, which are, for me, a better description of the process of making projects that are installation-like but have a huge amount of back research, a huge amount of administrative work or bureaucratic process to them. And similarly, the projects that I'm doing with students at the Bauhaus University are also organizational ventures. We've been running a series of workshops, and per semester we design a specific theme project and then realize something for it.
Can you maybe describe what it means to talk about projects in terms of the Bauhaus University Weimar?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of learning about the project system, I mean, it's interesting because on the one hand, I mean, you know, almost all contemporary artists that I know work on projects, especially, I mean, this is one of the biggest jokes in Berlin, is that no one has a job, everyone has a project. And, you know, regardless of whether you're an artist or, just a free-roaming media person, everybody has their projects. But the project system within the academic situation of the Bauhaus wasn't exactly familiar to me, and so I've been kind of learning it as I get here. But I mean, in the way I'm using it is that I'm certainly introducing a series of criteria and a title to students. The first one was kind of very heavily called discussing corporate control of culture and possibility for action, and so hoping to get the students really aware of a lot of collective type projects, from critical art ensemble to the Yes Men, to any individual practitioners who are really addressing the issue of the culture being taken over in a certain way by the byproducts of globalization, and then realizing that this is not anything at this point that we're for or against. We just have to figure out how to incorporate it into our own practices and take it on with a sense of responsibility that I think, like, in German you would say Stellungnahme, that you have to, like, position yourself in a certain way that's intentional. And I think that, you know, what our artists do, I mean, artists are setting themselves up as a specific kind of example in society, and of course the society, especially the Western society, is very familiar with all of the clichés surrounding the artist's position, the artist's occupation, how artists spend their time, whether or not artists have a use value in society, whether art is contributing something necessary to the society or not. And to me, you know, it never is an outdated idea that students be completely aware of what position in society they're taking on. You know, and if they identify with the kind of, like, oh, I'm just here to have a good time, completely be like an Aussteiger, like someone who's completely outside of society, or if someone's like, no, I really want to have an effect and I want to move, then exactly what their position is has to inform the way they approach both their studies and their career and their work life afterwards.
So you just said this phrase of the artist being an example of society. You as a practicing artist and a practicing teacher or professor, how do you mediate that? What do you, you know, what kind of tools do you pass on, and out of what background?
Yeah, I'm particularly, well, it's interesting because I in my own studies, when I was in my early 20s, I wasn't fast-forwarding and thinking, oh, someday I'm going to have an academic role. And almost all of my post-school activity has been completely concerned simply with the practice of being an artist and nothing with the credentials of being an academic at all. However, that, in my opinion, makes me even more qualified to teach artists because I know what it is like to get out of school and be one of thousands of artists, you know, entering the stream of all of the other thousands of artists and trying to decide how am I going to set something up that functions for me. And that some of the issue is differentiating yourself from everyone else, but some of it is just making sure you create something that you're going to be able to live with for your whole career, and definitely in terms of longer term thinking and not terms of short term accomplishment. And so after 15 years of art practice and both the individual kind of arrangement of how that works, how does my studio work, how does my own creation work, and then the subsequent inclusion of that work in the art system, having exhibitions and working with galleries and being part of a discourse, bringing that back. Luck, and also because of the way I work, I mean, my work is very performative, it's very about an open exchange between the thing I'm making and the thing people are seeing. And so it's actually very kind of a very easy segue into teaching for me. It's not like, here is my artwork, here is my teaching work, and they have nothing to do with each other. The same way my life and my work very seamlessly kind of connect. There isn't like, this is my private life, and this is my artistic life. And so for me, I think it so much of my work has been about, kind of creating a manifesto and constantly spreading it to another, to whoever the assembled group is at the time, whether it's in a lecture situation, an exhibition situation, through writing, through the web, through pictures. Having a group of students assembled it's the same sort of work, and so it works quite well. And I also realize, because some of the work that I'm making, I'm not fond of, I have a huge issue with how busy artists are supposed to be, and to me, meeting an artist who's done 100 group shows in 1 year is not anything I'm interested in at all. I would rather make 6 shows and 4 are excellent than make 100 and 10 are excellent. And so it is, the way I'm working is a very kind of, plodding sort of, growth process. And then the amount of, I'm not going to say power, but it's a very important thing then to have students who also learn, that kind of, that's intentional, that this, this is the way I see things. And I think I have a good capacity for not just pushing my thing onto my students, but if I see someone who's going in a certain direction, I know now enough about working that I can tell them what they should look at or who they should pay attention to, which may not be anything similar to how I'm doing it. But I think also largely I have very, I'm not ambivalent about how I see, what I think art should be doing in society. I'm not ambivalent about what I think the role of artists is and the responsibility artists have to their own work. And so I think that makes me really, suited for teaching, teaching students. And I think I realize when I'm in class, and also because I think it's important to have students realize, like, everything they need to incorporate in their work is all around them. So sitting in class and someone says something and then someone else is reminded of an anecdote, and sooner or later it seems like we've kind of wandered away from what we were supposed to be talking about. But to me, that's really important, just to make sure that everyone's minds are paying attention to everything around them, and that it is as important to say, oh yeah, I read a newspaper article about that last week, or oh yeah, this reminds me of this, and just to make sure that they're putting things together and they're not just like wait a minute, tell us again what we were supposed to know, and you know, and you need to really. There was just a book published about a, I don't even know what, I think I can't even remember now what this guy teaches at Harvard, but the title was called "The Man Upon Whom Nothing Was Lost," and to me this was like, you know, people that just like nothing gets past them, like people are just kind of absorbing everything, and I think that's a really important job an artist to really be kind of looking very carefully at what's going on in society and you know, transforming it, and not necessarily transforming it to their own desire, but just transforming it so that other people have use for it.
Mm-hmm. And so did you, I mean, for me that sounds pretty much like empowerment of individuality, or empowerment of, you called it, set up something that works for me. And
yeah. Well, I think first of all, I mean, I am actually kind of an enthusiast of like the community work and a lot of collective work, but I think that only works well when all of the individuals are clear about what they're doing. And I also think that someone choosing to be an artist is choosing not to be a lot of other things. And the aptitudes that you have as an artist, you can easily apply to something else. You know, I could have been a lawyer, and I probably would have been a good one. And, however, it wasn't just, you know, there was a huge list of things I wasn't willing to put up with. And the same thing, when people turn an art career into just any career, and they're like, busy, 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 you know, money, 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 you know, and end up removing a lot of aspects that, in my opinion, were the reason you became an artist and not a lawyer or not something else, is noteworthy for me that people be really clear about, like, what aspects of life am I interested in kind of hanging on to, and I'm willing to kind of fight for them no matter how, you know, impossible it might seem. And I think that's important. For people to realize, and that is an individual pursuit, and it's everything from, you know, do I need a house, do I want a family, you know, all those kind of very personal choices, to how, you know, I think the thing is that, like, the society, you know, we all get sold all the time what the classic success story is, but I think that's, you know, then it's really like you're in or you're, and I remember being in Los Angeles and a friend of mine saying, no, could you ever manage to live in Los Angeles? And I thought, it must be so bizarre to live in a city where if you're not in the movie industry, you're just out, you know? And New York is not like that. I mean, there's so many different facets of life to New York, but Los Angeles is really divided into, this is the movie industry, this is not the movie industry. Here are the successful people in the movie industry, here are not the successful people in the movie industry. And I think, especially artists should be getting away from that idea that, you know, if I'm on the cover of Art Forum, I am successful. If I'm not, I am not. And really should have the most power to really say, this is how I want to do it. You know, this is the model that I want to follow. And that doesn't mean that you don't get informed about all other, you know, I mean, the first thing you have to do is look at everybody else's model, you know, collectives. Some people work better in groups. Some people work better individually, you know, some people, you know, respond more to a much more kind of, whatever, busy international urban situation. Some people need, like, a lot of isolation, and, you know, I think it really helps just make sure students understand, you know, what it is they, you know, what set of circumstances do they need, and that they have the dedication to get it. Because as soon as they get out of school, so many automatic structures fall away. You know, they no longer have to do anything. They don't have a financial structure anymore. They don't have an audience built into what they're doing, and they have to create that all for themselves. And so they have to figure out, well, you know, how are they going to do it? What are the most important things? And I think that becomes very decisive. You know, and who 10 years after school is still doing what, you know, what they supposed they were supposed to be doing, or how they've developed, you know, into what they're doing.
So I've got two questions, actually. Who taught you? I mean, how did you, where did you get this empowerment to find out your way of dealing with things? Because I think you belong to the, let's say, very early generation, or you, or let me not even talk about generation, let me talk about yourself working in this kind of complex project work.
Mm-hmm.
And my second question is, since you just mentioned looking at models, would you say that an art school or an art education is the moment or the location to study and look at models,
mm-hmm.
which means contemporary colleagues or maybe even colleagues in history?
Yeah, I think for the first question is that, you know, when I left high school, I was a little younger than most people leaving high school, so I went to a university, a local university, which happened to be a very large university. And just because I didn't know what I could study, I studied sociology. And I was sitting, I mean, I remember my first sociology class was large. And I can't remember where the professor was, Latin American. And he came in, and the first thing he started doing was calling off numbers. And I realized he was calling our social security numbers as a way to take take roll. And so, you know, this was weird, you know, like you're sitting in there and all of a sudden he's like 1, 2, 1, 5, and you're like, oh, that must be me, you know. And so this first year I was, first of all, I was also visiting art, I mean, it was a university, so I had all sorts of classes. I had, you know, sociology, psychology, you know, but I did have some art classes. And then I started realizing that I do actually have a lot of these sociology background interests, but I don't think I have the career interest. So then I started looking into art programs, and I ended up choosing a private art school that had very small school, at the time had only about 900 students, pretty well-known school and pretty, you know, pretty renowned school, but not huge. And of course, that was exactly the opposite of the university. There was pretty much only art. I mean, I remember they had a few prerequisites in school in order to qualify it as a college. There was like an introductory English course. There was an introductory philosophy course. But I think they sort of addressed us like, you know, we must have been all from the back of the class in high school. Like the English teacher was kind of speaking a little slowly to us. And I thought, you know, all of these people in the school, these are the people that were reading all the books in high school because they had no friends. I mean, they weren't dumb. It almost seemed like there was some sort of assumption that if they're in art school, they must not be smart enough to be in real school. And in my case, that was certainly not the case. I mean, it was really a decision to go study art specifically and not go to an Ivy League school or, you know, some larger, massive school. And so the classical school system is 2 years of kind of everything and then 2 years of specialization. And so after the 2 years of everything, I started off actually in the interior design architecture program. And of course, when I showed up for this, like for the interview, I was all dressed like very, in my opinion, very urban, you know, from being from like the suburbs. I had like a leather skirt on, I had a tie on, and the woman who interviewed me said, oh yes, well, it's so obvious, you know, that you were meant to be an interior architect. I mean, look at you, you know, you look you know. And then within probably 3 weeks of school, I changed my major to, you know, general art and, like, you know, painting, because I was like, this is ridiculous. I don't want to be at a drafting table. I want to be, you know, in the art. And so after the first 2 years of school, I took a break and took a semester off, and I was touring with a rock band. And I went on this like 3-month tour of the United States. And then it was very difficult to convince myself to go back to school, because at this point I thought, I don't need structured education. You know, I now understand my path and I know what I want to do. And one mentor of mine at the school really convinced me to return and finish my degree. And so I ended up kind of striking a deal sort of with the school that I would stay in the curriculum, but more or less this teacher and two other teachers would kind of keep an eye on me and make sure that I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. I would attend some classes, but for the most part, I was kind of on this independent schedule. And for me, that was because I was in a very traditional art school, and the teacher would say, well, we're going to paint this model, and I would say, I'm not going to paint that. I'm going to go over here, and I would do whatever I wanted. And I think very quickly I had my own path that I was interested in following. And, you know, it's always a school like that. You know, you get someone who starts off in the first class, it's like, I'm an abstract expressionist, and feels like they don't need to learn any craft. And I don't believe that. I mean, I believe there is something to be said for, you know, but I think also at the moment when a student has definitely picked their own path, that you need to let them run it, you know. And however, the school I went to, despite it being a very expensive school and a very ambitious school and close to New York, there definitely was not the sensation of we're all now joining the official art world. I mean, the art world was still something like, oh, you can read about it in these art magazines, and sometimes famous people come down and talk to us. And I never really felt like they were taking my own ambition very seriously or my own ability to say, I'm doing, you know, this is what I'm doing. And I remember also them trying to teach a course that was going to be called Supporting Yourself as an Artist, but they couldn't find anyone to teach it because everyone was supporting themselves as a professor and nobody was supporting themselves as an artist, and so they couldn't really get the class going. And yeah, and so there was, you know, of course, on the one hand, you know, I've met students then and since who, for example, a lot of people graduate from art school and then they go work for a famous artist in the studio. And I don't know what they think is going to happen there. I think they hope it'll be inspiring, or they hope they'll get some connections, or maybe that artist will help them move. And mostly they get a real close look at how it works. And they'll come back and say, it's all business and deadlines and, you know, stress and talking to curators, and there's no, like, big ideas happening. And then I start thinking about in school, like, are students supposed to be removed from the hard facts of reality that, like, yes, if you run an art studio, you've got to figure out how to run it, you know? And if you're dealing with a museum, you have to learn how to deal with the museum. You can't just say, I'm an artist and I have all these crazy ideas. And then, you know, and a lot of art students, I think, want to be just concerned with the pure aspects of making their ideas work, and then later they'll deal with the nuts and bolts of it, but I don't really think that's responsible. I mean, you kind of got to show, I mean, it's going to be multitasking at some point, one way or another. They have to learn how to balance art ideas with art, you know, like the real concrete aspects of making it work. And so I really like to study or show students, you know, how, look at all these different ways this works. Like, there is no one way it works. You know, lots of people figure out a way to get their work made in lots of different ways. I mean, even something like the public art, you know, program is saying, this is a way, you know, to make things work. Here's another way to make things work. And so I think that's pretty helpful. I don't know now what the second question was, if I remembered it or answered both of them or not.
And I'm following your line. So you did your bachelor, and then what happened to you? Did you go and work for a famous artist?
No,
an MFA, a PhD? Nah. What happened to you?
I finished my bachelor work pretty much 5 years after I started school, and because I'd been in university 1 year prior, so I was in school for four years in art school and 1 year in university. And I was finishing in the beginning of the 90s. And so the whole time, the art school I went to was in Baltimore, and so it's close to New York. And I was in New York frequently, just, you know, visiting friends, looking around, looking at shows. And of course, the end of the, you know, I'm going to school at a time when Jeff Koons is a huge, huge thing. The 80s artist Schnabel, Donald Bachelor or any of this, and this was disgusting to me. I mean, I thought, and who would want to get saddled into this kind of like money machine? You know, I was definitely much more interested in street art or just pursuing something that seemed less blatantly commercial. And so the idea of going to New York after getting out of school didn't seem appealing at all. I mean, I really thought that's not inspiring, that's not exciting, and it seems like a lot of work. And also because I'd simultaneously paid for my schooling myself, and I'd been working full-time while being in school, I just wanted to get out of school and not have to work for money, you know, for money. And so at that time, a number of people I knew had been talking about Berlin, and this was in 91, so, you know, the wall, you know, the Wende was 2 years earlier, and so nobody was really clear, like, what's it like there now? Is it, like, completely established? But if anything, it seemed like it's got to be more exciting than New York. I mean, New York seemed very, like, we know what's happening there. We're going to go, we're going to be assistants, we're going to try to peck our way into the art system, and if we're lucky, we'll get in. And we know it's going to be hard, we know we're going to be broke, we know it's going to be uncomfortable. You knew already kind of what was lying ahead, and the question was, can you play or not? Whereas in Berlin, we were like, who knows what that's like? You know, that's got to be insane. And so I literally, my last year of school, I was planning to move to Berlin, and you know, I had a secret bank account. I started selling all of my stuff off, and by the end of the when I graduated, I literally had like a backpack left of stuff. Sold everything else that I had, left a lot of it behind, and then moved to Berlin like 12 days after I got out of school. And I ended up staying, you know, almost the entire 90s. I mean, the whole decade of the 90s. And so, in retrospect now, because Berlin ended up becoming such a hub of contemporary art, you know, people are like, oh, that was a very clever move, you know. And at the time, it was really just a gut decision, like, that's got to be fascinating. I've got to see what that's like. And in the end, certainly much more smart idea than if I'd gone immediately into an MFA program. Because I think for my work, the first year in Berlin, I was completely removed from any discourse about art. It was really just about very basic life survival. How am I going to learn this language? How am I going to make a living? Where am I going to live? Who am I going to be friends with? And what am I going to do? And being completely distracted with that kind of stuff that, of course, if you come from America and you land in the middle of Europe, that whole experience takes on such a mythological aura to it that it seems far more important than, you know, making more art. I mean, it seems so necessary that that be happening that way. And if I had gone to an MFA program right out of school, I most likely would have picked up the thread that I'd been working on in school, kept going with it, and I think the work would have been worse for it. However, taking a huge break, which seemed counterproductive maybe, like, oh no, you know, you're not making work, gave me a whole year of time to then think, all right, what was I working on? What was important about it? What was a waste of time? What can I carry on? And it gave me a whole new system of aesthetics and a whole way of... And also my dilemma in Berlin was really like, I need to live here. I need to build a life here. And how can that simultaneously be artwork? I remember, for example, I returned to New York to visit while I was living in New York, and I ran into a critic who very obviously was not making his living as a critic. He was making his living doing something else. And I ran into him in the subway, and it was very clear he's going to his job. And he was completely embarrassed to be caught going to work. And I started thinking about that, like, why is it that everyone thinks that, you know, doing other work is somehow dirtying your artwork? Or if that is a problem, how can you just combine the two things? So whatever it is you're doing is also your work. And I started doing a number of pieces, and my situation in Berlin was that I didn't have any papers to be there, I didn't have any permission to work, and so whatever I was going to do had to be just kind of de facto more entrepreneurial than something else. I couldn't just go somewhere and get a job as a secretary or, you know, do so many jobs. So I started inventing these kind of projects that would simultaneously make money and introduce me to kind of the society that I had just joined and give me something to do in it. And these projects then, you know, and at this point I would say coming out of my schooling, the first year or two, I was so preoccupied with just how am I doing this, that I wasn't particularly keeping myself well informed about the external art world. I didn't, there was also no phone system in Berlin. I didn't have access to any international news. I mean, you know, getting a New York Times was incredibly rare. There was no art forum. You couldn't get any of these magazines. And, you know, it was pre-internet. Nobody had anything like this. And I moved to, you know, I mean, now it's kind of, you know, really well documented that Berlin in the early 90s was not like, I mean, it was interesting that in New York the dot-com boom was starting, and I'm living in a town where nobody has a phone, you know. Nobody has electricity in some of their apartments. All of the apartments have coal heat. And so it was such a different way of living than a lot of the people I knew. But still in all, I started doing these work projects, and then slowly curators are saying, have you heard about this person? Have you heard about Andrea Fraser? Have you heard about these people? And then what ended up becoming, you know, a much larger movement of artists doing social, you know, relational aesthetics practice as a sort of larger project. You know, and to me, this was all a very, like, a lot of individuals coming up with similar ideas at the same time, and then somehow became a sort of, like, you know, now I have people say, like, oh, you're a 90s artist, you know, and I think, yeah, but that wasn't designed. I mean, that was named by someone else. And obviously it was also a response to the 80s, you know, what was happening in the 80s. But and for me, it was really just more really closely informed by my day-to-day life, you know, and it happened to resonate larger than just immediately where I was living.
Maybe connects very well to the previous question, which we missed out, and which was about models, mm-hmm. models of working. So is that, I mean, nowadays you're in the situation, you're working in your own model, and you're teaching, and are you introducing these models of contemporary art practice within your frame of teaching? Would you say that is a...
Yeah, I mean, I think I, like, you know, I'm certainly, you know, whenever I'm giving students feedback, I always have to sit there and think, now, how objective is this feedback? Are you telling them how you'd like to see this project get done? Are you telling them how you do it? Are you giving them, are you trying to, and what should you be doing? Should you be saying, yes, make this look like I would make it? Or should I be saying, no, you have to find your own way to finish this? I mean, a lot of it is, I think, gut reaction is that if I think someone's being very genuine, I let them follow that. And if I think someone is trying to kind of kid me or kid themselves, then I tell them to not be doing that. And in terms of models, I think yeah, they need to know. You know, it's complicated. Like, a student comes up with a project and you say, oh, well, you know, Ilya Kabakov did this, and then they're kind of like, oh man, it's already been done before, and then they get kind of disappointed. And you say to them, well, you know, okay, now if you're here pursuing the original idea, you know, as a sophomore, that's a huge battle you're fighting. And, you know, of course they need to know, like, who their kin are or who the thing. And then I think sometimes you have to be careful too that they're just not trying to imitate what they think the work's about, that they need to understand really fundamentally what someone's pursuing. But, I think for my students it's pretty clear what sort of models or kinds of practice I prefer or I'm urging them to follow. And, I still think I have enough of a broad amount of information to give them really kind of firsthand examples of this person did it this way, this person could do it this way, this, and, you know, both famous classical examples, like, you know, telling them about a Warhol model or something, and then, you know, really just kind of very contemporary people that they might not know about at all who are working locally or something. And also, not in any way exclusively artists, but just bringing up anything, you know, bringing up, you know, business people or how this works or how this works. I mean, to me, there is no, it's a really boring education if you're just concentrating on what other artists have made and what is happening in art, you know. I mean, I always ask the students what they're reading, you know, and I certainly hope it's not just art magazine. You know, obviously, they've got to be reading, like, a mix of stuff, but, you know, I mean, I don't want to see people try to, like, too intentionally turn something into art, you know. I mean, I think quite often it's much more interesting if they would just leave it and then just not worry about whether it then transforms itself into art. And I do also try to show them a lot of projects where I think, like, here was a really good idea, and unfortunately someone tried to make it look like art afterwards, and maybe they should have just left it at the idea or tried to figure out a better form for it. And I think that's actually not bad. I mean, the job title here, I think, is a little bit about that, about saying, you know, like, what is the most obvious form for this? And, you know, this is media art, technically, in the department, but, you know, I don't care if it ends up looking like, in fact, you know, that's a huge warning sign if, you know, it's already supposed to look like media art before they've even decided what it is that they're working on. An artist, a student who comes with the realization before they've even got the idea. Like, I sat in my first semester here, I sat in on somebody else's, it wasn't her thesis presentation, it was just like an introduction to what she was going to do. And I was sitting there thinking, man, I must have missed when she said what this was about. And so I kind of interrupted. I said, I'm sorry, you know, the presentation looks fine, but what is your topic, actually? And she said, oh, I got to really think about what I'm going to do. You know, and she had a whole, like, installation in, like, a 3D interactive model, but she had no idea why, you know, or she just decided, I think it would be really cool, you know, if I had this round room and a couple pictures, and I thought, oh, no, you know, I mean, like, and obviously, it's a fundamental aspects of art education that have gone lost.
So pure form, no content.
Yeah, like thinking, oh, I'll just have to think up a concept for it afterwards. Yeah.
Is there anything you would like to say, because time is up, like a question, an important question I missed, a vision you would like to express?
I mean, I think definitely, especially now, the way the whole culture now works, or the Western culture works, is all about speed. And, you know, there's so much writing about this. There's a social cultural writer called James Gleick who wrote a book called Faster, you know, where he just talks about, like, everything keeps getting sped up and everybody else's time is used somewhere else. I mean, just the case that, you know, multitasking is an obvious thing, that now we're, like, using our phones to do everything and we always have our phones or whatever. And, you know, that's not me. I'm not making any new points to anyone there. But at the same time, I think that starts carrying over. And this is what's informing media art. I mean, like, media art now is taking over that kind of technology. But to me, I think there is something to be said for pacing yourself for a long stretch. You know, I when I first was in New York, I was doing a lot of research in the library. And I used to run into all these old art magazines, and you would see someone who was on the cover of an art magazine. I'd never heard of them. They had a career that was about a year and a half long, very fast. And this, to me, I think if you, you know, this isn't something like, you know, Schneidan's Get or something. Like, I think really, I'm, you know, much more interested in longevity and really kind of thinking about it. And that doesn't mean to be not prolific, or it doesn't mean to be slow or lazy. It's just really thinking about, you know, stacking up everything. And I also believe in a lot of cumulative process, that everything informs the next thing. So I'm always very careful of students who, like, have an idea here, and, you know, they have a lot of, like, disparate ideas. And even in the art system, you see this all the time. You see professional artists trying a lot of weird things out, and to me, I think it's very important. I mean, obviously, the studio model I have is that there is a kind of, you know, overarching theme that is informing all of these projects, and they're all, you know, and that doesn't mean that sooner or later one project might say, okay, now it's time to switch somewhere else. But I think to really have an understanding of continuity and to really have an understanding that just because the culture is saying, do it fast, do it this, that you don't have to adhere to that, that you need to kind of like figure out exactly what your own pace is and how much technology you're willing to let in and how much, you know, information from outside.